Thank you, Blessing and Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, November 18th, 2015.
The whole discourse that's playing out seems to be so ridiculous that it would not have a place in a system of proper political parties, modern political parties.
Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, November 18th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
I'm Marvelous Mhlanganya Huye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Factional wars worsen in ZANU-PF as the party heads towards its annual conference in Victoria Falls.
Vice President Mnangagwa today sought to allay fears that the weekend ZANU-PF Chitungwiza Meda suicide case would deter possible investors, saying it was a criminal case with nothing to do with politics.
The truth of the matter is that he was not honest to the question. He was just dilly-dallying. He was trying to hide.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
Factional wars in ZANU-PF are getting worse, with the Women's League setting up a five-member committee to probe Mutare senator and former diplomat Monica Muchangwa for allegedly backing members accused of disrespecting First Lady Grace Mugabe. ZANU-PF Women's League National Deputy Secretary Eunice Sandi Moyo says Muchangwa allegedly attended a meeting that endorsed under fire former Manicaland Chair Lady Happiness Nyakwiedzwa, who was ousted for allegedly disrespecting the increasingly powerful First Lady Grace Mugabe, also the Women's League boss. Monica Muchangwa's husband and War Veterans Minister Chris Muchangwa is also in the line of fire for his alleged links to a faction allegedly headed by Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Mnangagwa and First Lady Grace Mugabe are seen by many analysts as rivals in the battle to succeed an aging President Mugabe. But the two have denied they lead factions. Efforts to get a comment from Muchangwa were futile, as she was said to be in a meeting. Sandi Moyo did not respond to calls on her mobile. The party also has been rocked by serious factional fights in Mashingo, Mashonaland West Province, and Mashonaland East. Political analyst Brix Bomba of Africa Trust tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that developments in ZANU-PF are shocking.
The whole discourse that's playing out seems to be so ridiculous that it would not have a place in a system of proper political parties, modern political parties that, you know, are not built around an individual and his wife and maybe kids and, you know, that are not dynastic in that very backward feudal sense. But what we are now seeing in ZANU-PF now is really a throwback to the feudal era.
ZANU-PF has been likened to a troop of baboons incessantly fighting amongst itself, but coming together to face external threats. Are these fights an indication that the opposition is weak?
Well, to some extent, it is true, because the opposition is not at its strongest point at the present moment. But I wouldn't want to think that there's something so smart or unconquerable in terms of how, you know, ZANU-PF operates. I think what we are seeing playing out right now is the collapse of the hegemony that they've had.
That was political analyst Brix Bomba of Africa Trust speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. Mrs. Mugabe is expected to address a rally in Murewa Center, Mashonaland East Province, on Saturday.
Meanwhile, Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa today sought to allay fears that the weekend ZANU-PF Chitungwiza Meda suicide case would deter possible international investors from coming to Zimbabwe. Responding to parliamentary questions from MDCT Mkoba MP Amos Chibaya, Mr. Mnangagwa said the murders of two ZANU-PF members by a colleague at the weekend had nothing to do with politics. We reached out to lawmaker Chibaya for more.
I asked the leader of the House, with Emmerson Mnangagwa, that is government able to deliver anything given the vicious infighting and power struggle in the ruling party. And I also asked him that he doesn't he think that the infighting that is done in public in their party will deter investment. And I also give reference to what actually happened in Sindiza, where members of his party fought in public openly and they killed each other.
So what was his response?
His response was that the infighting in ZANU-PF has got nothing to do with the business. But I later on raised what we call a supplementary question that the ruling party is the one in power and whatever they do has got serious repercussions to the country. The truth of the matter is that he was not honest to the question. He was just dilly-dallying. He did not respond to the question I was asking him. He was trying to hide. But frankly speaking, what is actually happening in their party, ZANU-PF, is actually destroying our economy because one of the conditions which is considered by investors if they want to invest in a country is political stability. So in this case, their infighting and their power struggle is actually affecting investment in our country.
What else happened in Parliament today, if you can just give us a roundup?
There was also a question about what is happening at Christmas. I'm sure you are quite aware that this kid, Zube, was giving himself hefty salaries, while the clients of Christmas are not getting any service from Christmas. The minister responsible, the minister of health, was not in the house. Some of the ministers, they don't actually turn up for these questions in the other sessions.
That was MDCT Mkoba MP Amos Chibaya on the line with Studio 7 Sandra Nyaira from Harare.
The Environmental Management Agency is urging authorities to ban the use of K-lights as the Harare City Council and other municipalities countrywide are failing to manage waste. Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
The failure by the Harare City Council and other municipalities nationwide to deal with litter has prompted the Environmental Management Agency, or EMA, to advocate for the banning of K-lights, which are used mainly when serving food in restaurants and at functions. The piling up of garbage in several communities is of major concern to EMA, according to the organization's spokesperson, Libert Mugadza. Mugadza says the use of K-lights and plastics by operators of food outlets were resulting in the increase of litter in Harare and other major towns and cities.
We need to work on a plan to get rid of K-light use in the country and revert back to alternatives that are environmentally friendly and that also support even part of our industry, for example, the paperboard.
Cosmas Mudzingwa, who works with the local waste recycling company, agrees with the agency that the use of K-lights should be prohibited. A Harare-based chemist, Jameson Mchakata, who also runs a canteen in the city's central business district, says K-lights may cause blockages of water pipes if they were not disposed of properly.
There are some areas where it's being used as constructive and building materials, where you don't see its imminent danger as a waste. But we take, for instance, in fast food, every 2 minutes it's being thrown away. And it has nothing that is adding to the community.
He adds that burning K-lights after use may also cause several diseases like lung cancer.
K-light, we are talking about polystyrene, and we are saying it's the cases, the building blocks of that polymer is styrene, which is a carcinogenic chemical. That's why you find each time when you try to burn K-light, it burns with a black soot. It doesn't burn completely.
At the same time, Interfresh General Manager Tawanda Rukuni is urging companies that use K-lights to work with local authorities in waste management to ensure a clean environment.
The industry is contributing about 1.6 million tons of PET waste, and each company has a certain contribution. And at this point, it would be most ideal for each company to contribute towards waste recovery depending on the contribution that the company is making.
Meanwhile, the president of the Passengers Association of Zimbabwe, Tafadzwa George Goliath, says while his organization agrees that several commuters who use public transport were the most litter bugs, the banning of the use of K-lights would have a ripple effect on the local food industry, as many food outlets are using them to pack and serve food to consumers. Goliath says many people have resorted to establishing backyard kitchens in the central business district as formal jobs are hard to come by owing to the poor performance of the national economy.
What we are proposing is to actually do awareness campaigns so that people can understand how important, to keep our environment clean. We are also thinking that banning the K-lights is not the solution, because a lot of people are going to lose employment, the company that manufactures that. But what we encourage is this company to take a leading role in trying to actually reduce littering of these K-lights.
Studio 7 failed to get a comment from the Harare City Council, but one of the city councillors, Hamimu Dzingwa, says K-light importers should be taxed heavily, while the revenue generated should be directed towards waste management in Harare and other local authorities.
Because the problem that we have in Zimbabwe right now is that our government is good at coming up with policies that lack implementation. So it's good, but on the other side, my recommendation is that government, even EMA, must come together and work with the council, especially with regards to waste management.
Some health experts say the failure by many municipalities in major towns and cities to deal with waste was the major cause of an outbreak of cholera that killed thousands of people a few years ago. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metum Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
And now here's news in brief. Former NUST Vice Chancellor Professor Lindela Roland Ndlovu died in Bulawayo this morning. Although details are still coming in, Professor Ndlovu is reported to have collapsed while he was on his way to a private hospital in the city, where he later died. Professor Ndlovu became the second Vice Chancellor for NUST after he was appointed in 2005 to replace the institution's founding Vice Chancellor, Professor Phineas Makurane. Professor Ndlovu's 10-year tenure ended following the appointment of Professor Samson Sibanda last week. And while thousands of people across the country are counting their losses following hailstorms that destroyed homes and property on Monday, at least three families in Mulilima West District are mourning their loved ones who died in the rainstorms. Those killed include two early childhood development pupils from Sevaka Primary School in Plumtree. One of them was buried today. The Chronicle newspaper says a third child died in Dolwane area.
Coming up,
and now we take a look at regional and international news.
Russian President Vladimir Putin and his Egyptian counterpart Abdel Fattah el-Sisi agreed today on new but unenclosed airline security measures as the first step towards a resumption of flights between the two countries.
The United Nations says Secretary General Ban Ki-moon will not be traveling to North Korea next week despite media reports saying otherwise.
And Bangladesh's highest court has upheld the death sentences of two opposition leaders who were convicted of war crimes committed during the country's 1971 War of Independence against Pakistan. You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington. We're broadcasting on the 909 medium wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15455 shortwave frequencies.
A Zimbabwean-based in North Carolina, USA, says he's in the process of collecting shoes for poor children in Zimbabwe following a successful public campaign in which 76,000 new shoes were shipped to the country for beneficiaries in all provinces. Noah Manyika of Nexus Global Serve, running a Shoes for Healing campaign, says he started the project in order to cater for the needs of poor children while creating political dialogue in Zimbabwe ravaged by social, economic and political problems. Manyika, who started collecting shoes soon after the setting up of the unity government in Zimbabwe and will soon go back home with an assortment of shoes, tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube there's a lot that Zimbabweans living in the diaspora can do for their country, even if they have divergent political views.
My mission in the U.S. is temporary. I'm a Zimbabwean through and through. Love my country, citizen of Zimbabwe first before anything else. And I'm always looking for opportunities to see what I can do for my country. So, and I don't look at it just in terms of investment. I just look at, you know, what is it that we can do, all of us as Zimbabweans, to really make a difference in my country. And I know that things are not easy right now in Zimbabwe.
But what can Zimbabweans really do from outside, you know, to help the nation?
Very small things. Think about this, Gibbs. You went to school in Zimbabwe, right?
Yes.
I went to primary school, secondary school in Zimbabwe. But how many of us, for instance, even bother to look for each other in the diaspora and say, well, the school, Vungu Council School that I went to is derelict right now. Let's do something about the school. The high school that I went to, Moleli High School, is derelict right now. Let's mobilize resources and do something about the school. We're always thinking about, you know, the bigger picture. But, you know, I think that it's that kind of engagement at community level, making a difference where we can, that will get us used to working with each other and possibly help us in terms of changing the bigger picture.
Maybe some people may argue and say that they are not even accepted back home. So that's why they're not doing anything much to improve the situation there.
You have to fight to be accepted. I really do think that sometimes we exaggerate. I'm not talking about the political problems. I think we exaggerate sometimes the impediments that are there for us to engage with our own communities. I have, with some of my friends, mobilized almost 50,000 pairs of shoes to give to kids in different schools in rural areas. And I haven't found any impediments to that. Well, they've been there, but I have said, you know what, I have to work around this. And, we've gone knocking ministry doors, all kinds of places, and says, look, and say, we are helping our local communities. Let us do that. And sometimes you have to fight for it.
Mm. Tell us a bit about the shoes.
When the GNU started, I actually, approached all the political parties in the country and said, look, we are Zimbabweans. We have nothing to do with what the bigger argument is. But we want to help kids who go to some of these poor schools and, you know, they go to school without shoes. And just like we did, you know, when we were growing up, we actually ended up starting a program called Shoes for Healing, which was used actually by all the political parties. And it was really interesting because we were hosted by everybody when we would bring these shoes into the country and we'd go to a poor school and, you know, donate these shoes and use that to help the kids, but also use that as the beginning of a conversation for national healing and so on. So we did that for several years. And even after the GNU, we continued with that. In fact, last year we sent 26,000 pairs of shoes that we've just finished distributing in different schools, just so that we could remain engaged. And we found a lot of receptivity to that.
So you're still doing it, and are you looking for more shoes?
Yeah, we're looking for more shoes. In fact, my plan is to go to Zimbabwe in March, and between now and then, we actually want to put together a container of shoes. And we haven't just distributed shoes. At one time, we actually put in our container material to build classrooms in a school for displaced kids in Hatcliffe. And by the way, all our efforts, we don't focus on one province. All our shoes have gone to all the provinces in Zimbabwe. And that's really, we do that intentionally because we want people to understand that, you know, this is not about poor Shona kids. This is not about poor Ndebele kids. This is about poor Zimbabwean kids. And I think that's very, very important.
How do you get these shoes, Mr. Manyika?
Talk to friends of Zimbabwe. One of the organizations that we work with is an organization called Samaritan's Feet. Interestingly, it was started by a very good friend of mine who is from Nigeria, who, just like me and you, used to go to school without shoes.
That was Stephen Bunganai, CEO and founder of Global Youth Foundation in Zimbabwe. He spoke with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from here in Washington, D.C.
A young Zimbabwean based in New York, Stephen Wunganai, has been selected to head the World Bank's Africa panel ahead of the crucial climate change summit in Paris. The panel will make submissions to world leaders, in particular those from Africa, to prioritize climate change mitigation programs in their budgets. Wunganai, who is also the leader of Global Youth Foundation Zimbabwe, says all is set for Paris.
I have been nominated to be the chairman of the African Youth Panel that is going to be drafting a proposal to be submitted at COP21 World Climate Change Forum next month in Paris.
What responsibility will you have, seeing as you come from Zimbabwe and most people would be asking that does climate change also affect Africa and other developing nations? What are you going to be putting in this proposal that will be presented in Paris?
We'll be putting proposals that basically coming from youth organizations on their drafts to their government, their voices that needs to be heard. And we are looking to be starting initiatives, starting projects to move from gas emissions into the world as well to clean energy projects. As we look in countries, most in Africa, we base on oil, and oil is one of the substance that is contributing to climate change. Countries like Nigeria, they produce a lot of gas through oil production and all that stuff. So we will be drafting projects that are gas-free, renewable energy, and in substitute of heavy gas emissions into the world.
What kind of engagement are you planning to have with governments like those of Zimbabwe when it comes to climate change?
We are planning to start on trainings. We are planning to lobby our government to implement mandatory environmental trainings in schools, in our communities, as well as to teach our people on the effects of deforestation. And one of the things that we need to do is not only looking at deforestation, and I'll give an example. In Zimbabwe, we are having electricity shortages. Our people in rural areas and as well as urban areas are relying on firewood, are relying on charcoal, are relying on coal as their means of energy, since we don't have electricity. So how can you tell a person that does not have electricity not to cut down a tree? So these are the challenges that we are going to be facing, as well as we want to implement the use of solar power energy as well in substitute of the firewood, in substitute of coal, those dirty emissions gases.
That was Stephen Wunganai, CEO and founder of Global Youth Foundation Zimbabwe. He spoke with us here in Washington, D.C. in the Studio 7 studios.
It's that time of the year when university students showcase their inventions, which can translate into big earning projects if they are lucky. But some final year students who are exhibiting their work for the public as part of their practical examination say lack of funds is hampering their innovations. Arthur Chigoriwa has more from Chinoy.
One of the projects on display is a cooking stove stand invented by Chinoy University of Technology fine arts student Mavis Marange. Marange's adjustable multi-purpose cooking stand, which she says was inspired by Zimbabwe's popular three-legged pot. She says the stand would end the wars faced by thousands of rural women who, since time immemorial, have been using what some may term unreliable cooking stands that sometimes break under the weight of cooking utensils. To compound their problem of the small and easily broken cooking stands, which are molded mainly out of earthy mud, the rural cooking stands are largely small to cater for big gatherings. Marange says the adjustable multi-purpose cooking stand will change all that, but she is worried that the project may fail to see the light of the day due to lack of funds. Last week, she was forced to use cardboard boxes as material to construct the cooking stand for the exhibition instead of the expensive prototype materials of brass and steel iron.
What is needed is money to make the actual prototype, not a model. For money to make a prototype. Of course, I use the model. Prototype is the working model, which we can actually use using the actual materials. And if I make a prototype and proper drawings, it can be marketable at the stage it is right now.
Marange said the adjustable multi-purpose cooking stand project was inspired by the popular rural three-legged pot used mainly in the rural areas. She thinks it can solve the cooking problem faced by most rural women, though it does not eliminate the use of firewood. She said the multi-purpose cooking stand is adjustable to the height of the user, it has wheels to reduce the length of carrying pots, and varies in sizes to suit the number of people to be catered for.
The adjustable multi-purpose cooking stand has three stages. You can adjust it to a suitable position for the user. And the stand has also wheels, which can be used on all terrains to reduce the length of carrying the pots from one stage to the other. You just push the cooking stand using the handles and the wheels. The wheels can be locked and you can also use them as the stand of the cooking frame. I started to think about the three-legged pot that it can stand on its own. Then I thought of putting wheels on a big pot. But my supervisor advised me to make something close to a trolley. Then I come up with this idea, playing around the three-legged pot.
Chinoy University of Technology Art Department lecturer Dr. Mishek Bere praises the university's drive for innovation among its students.
And Chinoy University of Technology thrives to come up with programs that answer to the need of the nation and to the need of our industry.
Dr. Bere said the university will soon introduce a new program in industrial design and innovation that will equip students with skills to become employers and not workers.
These programs, as I said, are designed to create students who will not only work as employees, but we hope after they study these programs, they are able to perhaps challenge what is happening in the industry and, if possible, they will come up with their own industries and they are able to become employers.
Marange also displayed another artwork of her hands, a painting she named Painless Graduate, at the exhibition. The painting attracted many people at the exhibition.